Thursday, January 12th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, we begin our ongoing in-depth series on how to attend conventions.
Let's do this!
So, today at work, I spent about half my day working on our forums.
Yeah, people might have noticed, because there was a lot of posting going on while you were fiddling with them.
And if you didn't notice, that's because you're not on our forums, and you should be.
Yeah, the forums are really hopping. I mean, we're not just saying that to try to get you to go. There's actually a lot of people there posting about the show.
Yeah, and if you want to, you know, discuss the things we talk about with like-minded people, you should probably go to the forums, and it's a lot of fun. And the more people, the merrier.
Plus, we added, well, Scott added, avatars.
Avatars. I think it's a lot better than the PHP BB avatars, which are like, they get really big and they stick out into the page. And I don't know, I always think that people use way too big ones and they're not uniform and they're all kind of ugly.
The worst, have you ever been on just those unmoderated forums that are out there in the cesspool of the internet?
Yep.
The ones that don't have restrictions on, like, SIGs. I've seen SIGs that were a full 640 by 480, like, flash animation.
Yeah, I can't take that stuff. So, our avatar is just these nice, cute little 32 by 32 pixel dealies. Other things I added to the forum besides avatars are a few new themes. There's a blue theme and a red theme that are new.
We're thinking about putting the blue theme or some derivative of it on the main site.
Yeah, that way the forum will appear to be seamlessly integrated with the actual site, which could be kind of cool. I made the blue theme the default because I think it looks better than the default theme. But if you really want the original default theme, it's still in there and you can switch it in your account settings or whatever.
Also, due to popular demand, meaning three people complained about this, there is now a link back to the site from the forum.
Yeah, it might not be obvious, but now in the big white title that says Front Row Crew Forums at the top of the page, if you click on that, it'll take you back to frontrowcrew.com, which you should be going to anyway, even if you, you know, get the podcast via some RSS somewhere.
Even though not that many do compared to the people who just download the MP3.
Yeah, but everyone visit frontrowcrew.com, and there's actual like posts in the blog and other information for you that you should check out, and the forum.
Yep, and regarding that, I just have one quick question. Whoever's using Winamp to listen to this, like straight off the feed, I'm curious how you're doing it. Because I look at all my feed statistics every couple days, and of all the different readers that it says, like, contact the RSS and download the files, one of them is Winamp. One, all alone, and it downloads every single episode.
Hmm, I wonder.
Yeah, I was just curious about that.
Because I don't think Winamp has a podcatcher in it.
Unless someone made a plugin that does it.
Maybe.
I don't know, I haven't used Winamp since I switched to Linux.
I use it, but I only play MP3s in it, and that's it. And not often, either.
I mean, I used to use it for Shoutcast, and I know if you give it a URL of an MP3, it'll just play it, so...
Mm-hmm. Another small change I made to the forum, you'll notice in the top left, after you sign in, there's a little pull-down menu, and you can change the categories in this little menu. And that way, if you click on the technology category, then only the technology stories will appear, and it's easier than clicking on the categories tab and then clicking on the category you want. You could just use a little pull-down menu. It makes it a little easier.
Which is kind of key now that there's a lot of discussions going on.
Yeah, now that
there's
three pages of posts, it's a lot easier to filter out the categories using this pull-down on the side than...
Along with this, we're probably going to add some more categories at some point, because I noticed there aren't that many categories that are useful yet.
Yeah, we'll add more categories. It shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, if you have a really burning desire for us to add a specific one, let us know and we'll think about it.
Or maybe we'll just start a new thread, category request thread.
Yep.
The last thing I added is private messaging, but it's not private messaging like on PHP BB or whatever.
It's really cool.
It's much better than that. I thought it's called whispering, actually, which is very appropriate to how it works. Basically, when you start a new discussion, you can type in someone's username on the forums, and it'll auto-complete the usernames in case you forget them. So just, like, start typing, like, a letter, and the rest of it will appear, you know, like Google Suggest or whatever.
So I swear to God, if anyone takes the name Rim with, like, a D at the end of it, I'll kill you.
Yeah. And then, you know, set your subject and type your message, and you can start your own private discussion with somebody, and the only people who can see it are you and that other person.
Now, cooler, you can do that within another discussion.
Right, so let's say me, Rim, Joe Blow, and Joe Schmo are having a discussion about...
Anime.
And Joe Blow and Joe Schmo start having a fanboy rant, right? In the middle of that discussion, I can send a whisper to Rim. I type in Rim when I reply to it just like I would reply to any message. But in the whisper box, I type Rim, and I say, wow, these two guys are huge fanboys. That'll put a message in that discussion, but only me and Rim will see it. And those Joe Blow and Joe Schmo won't see it when they go and look at that discussion.
I guess the technical term is side channel communication.
Yeah, you're literally whispering to one other person in the discussion without anyone else seeing it. It's way cool.
Yeah, play around with the forum. And obviously, let us know if you find anything broken. We'll fix it right away.
Yeah, I don't think anything's broken now. I've pretty much fixed it all. All right, and since we pushed the forum a little bit too much, let me push the rest of our stuff. You can email us feedback. Email still works, and, you know, especially if you're not a forum-type person, you just want to talk to us or something like that.
Yep, because we used to get, you know, not really negative feedback, but constructive criticism, and we seem to have addressed all the complaints because they stopped coming in.
Yep. Anyway, so send emails of any sort, audio feedbacks, you know, or anything like that to geeknights@gmail.com.
Call our phone number. I mean, if you call it and you leave us a message that's even halfway crap, we'll probably play it and then respond to it in some way.
Yeah, the phone number is, I'm going to put it on the website eventually when I redo the blog part.
508-677-0300.
508-677-0300.
So, moving on with the news, we talked a lot about the new Mac Intel PCs coming out, and now there's a lot of questions as to whether or not they're actually going to be able to run Windows, and the short answer is no one knows.
The story is that right now, PCs with, you know, normal Intel, AMD processors, whatever, have a BIOS in them.
Basic input-output system.
Right.
That's all that stuff you see when the computer boots before Windows or Linux starts. Yeah. You know, hit F1, and then there's all these options you don't understand.
Mm-hmm. That's all that stuff. Basically, Apple doesn't use BIOS. Apple uses open firmware, which is more advanced by far. BIOS is really, really old and crappy. It's just so standard and old that we keep using it instead of switching to something new. There's something even newer called EFI, which is something Intel invented.
Extensible Firmware Interface.
Yeah. They invented that for those Itanium chips, actually.
Which is, isn't that what's in the MacTels?
That is what is in the MacBooks, that with the Intel Duo whatever chips.
Now, this raises a big question, because Windows Vista supposedly is going to support this just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But Windows XP, 2000, 98, 3.1.1, not a chance.
Nope, those do not support it. However, Windows XP 64-bit edition supposedly does support EFI.
Of course, that ray of hope is shattered immediately by the fact that these aren't 64-bit processors.
Yeah, the Intel Core Duo is not a 64-bit processor. So the question is, will somebody... Will, you know, Windows 2000 XP might just work. We don't even know. If they don't work, will somebody create some sort of patch or mod to make them work? I say probably yes, definitely. Will Linux work? Almost certainly. But it could be that you just can't run Windows 2000 or XP and that you will need to have Windows Vista to run on these Apple books.
And keep in mind that it's not 100% that Windows Vista will work. Because
yeah.
Phil Schiller, the Apple guy, who the only one who responded to this so far, said that they don't sell or support Windows itself, but at the same time, they're not preventing anyone specifically from using Windows. So they're not trying to keep Windows off, but they're not trying to make Windows work. They're just kind of ignoring it.
Yeah. So basically, it might work, and it's a pretty good bet that it will, but I wouldn't actually put any money down.
See, I would kind of put money down because I point out two things. One, EFI, at least in its raw form, but no one knows if they're going to implement this on these specific boxes, can fully emulate BIOS.
Oh, see, I read something like that somewhere and I was a little confused. So it can emulate BIOS.
Yes. However, we don't know if these will do it or if that emulated BIOS will work 100%. Because Windows relies on the BIOS more than you'd think.
Mm.
Two... The reason I'll bet that any Windows is going to work is that, one, Grub works just fine with EFI.
Mm-hmm.
Two, Grub can boot Windows just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Case closed. Because once Windows boots, it's fine. It just has to boot.
Really? It doesn't use the BIOS after it boots?
Not to the point. Basically, once you get it booted, as long as the hardware abstraction layer is okay, it's going to work.
Uh-huh.
Now, the question will be if the old versions of Windows include a hardware abstraction layer that can handle whatever proprietary bits might be in these MacTel boxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that's my question. It's something no one seems to be addressing is these MacBooks have things like the Express slot. They have things like the built-in on-motherboard Wi-Fi and USB, Bluetooth, that's part of the MacBook. They have all kinds of Mac stuff in them. Windows has a lot of drivers, but does it have drivers for that stuff? Will it work?
Now, I could see Microsoft specifically going out of their way to add all that to Windows Vista, because, hey, they'll make money selling Windows to people who want Mac hardware. It's win for them.
No, because anyone who's using Windows on Mac hardware totally is not paying for a new copy of Windows.
I don't know. Those people already dropped a couple G's on a laptop.
Yeah, also, which means they're not about to shell out $250 for Windows.
Maybe we'll see discounts or something. You never know.
Maybe. I just really don't think Microsoft wants to sell Apple hardware. They want to sell hardware that has Windows on it already. You know?
Yeah, but consider the markup they make when they actually sell Windows in a box. I mean, Dell pays, I think, $30 or $40 for Windows, but it's $300 if you go to the store and buy it in a box.
I think the store makes most of that money. I don't really think Microsoft is raking it in there.
I don't know. I don't know who buys those boxes. I mean, I bought a Windows 2000 box in the year 2000.
See buying one of those in, like, an absolute, like, drop-dead emergency. Like, you absolutely need a valid Windows CD and CD key. You can't get one any faster than going to Staples. You don't know anyone who's got one. You can't pirate one. All the internets are real slow.
Well, see, that's now. I mean, back in the day, when Windows 2000 came out, I built my computer, like, the week before that, and then I bought Windows 2000 at the store, like, the next day.
Oh, all right, yeah.
You couldn't pirate it. Now you can pirate it, but back then...
I bought Windows 98 SE. I had 95B from already, but I got a 98 SE CD... just because 95 couldn't play some of the games I was buying.
You know, I never had any 95 after A.
Wow.
I used Windows 95A, and then I had Windows 2000.
I had 95B, then I had 98 SE, and then I got 2000 way later. And then I got XP for free from school, legally.
In fact, I remember when you got Windows 2000, or when you first really used Windows 2000, and you, the staunch Microsoft hater, admitted that it was, in fact, a fairly decent product.
It was better than Windows 98, is what I said. And it is.
Yeah.
That's about all I said. Because Linux still just... I was using Linux. I've been using Linux for like 7 years. Or even more, I don't know, since high school. But it was never good enough to be my 100% of the time operating system until like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yep, because I remember I tried. You gave me a copy of Mandrake, and I tried to install it on this extra computer I had. And it installed, and it was just kind of terrible.
You know, the thing was is that, like, at the time, Mandrake didn't seem terrible because I had been using Red Hat.
Yeah.
And relative to Red Hat, it was great. You know, and it's basically, it wasn't great enough for me to use it all the time. But I also got to think that in college, I was playing a lot of PC games, a lot of Steam, a lot of Counter-Strike. So
true.
That had a strong effect on it.
I mean, we would literally come home from class, like, every day and then just start playing Counter-Strike for, like, 4 hours.
Yeah, but I did use Linux in college for all of my work, and then my last 2 years, I was pretty much using Gentoo only.
Yeah, I actually, it was weird, but despite the fact that I was in IT, we used Windows a lot more than we used Linux,
yeah.
Because most of our labs were Windows, like Active Directory, Windows Domain, crap, because all the Linux stuff was kind of easy, and they didn't spend much time on it.
I had a lab partner do all that, and I did all the Linux stuff.
See, I was the lab partner who did all the Windows stuff, and then the other guy did all the Linux stuff. Of course, now I use Linux exclusively.
So for my thing of the day, I got the video that disappeared from Google Video yesterday is back. It's basically a video of three guys at a comedy festival singing a song that's kind of funny.
Yeah, it wasn't as funny as I expected anything like that to be, but at least the topic hit close to home.
Very close.
Yeah.
Watch it.
So my thing, you know how whenever they bring games over from Japan to America, they always romanize them or localize them?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they'll change the cover, they'll change translation things, they'll take out the cultural jokes that Americans wouldn't get, they'll make the game easier, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a site that shows the opposite. What they do to games that come from America to Japan. And they do a lot of the same things.
Well, it shows the biggest thing it shows is the changing of the cover art of the packaging.
Which was a lot more than you'd expect for some games.
The biggest one, I think, was this, what was the name of the game? Like, Sudoku or something like that? I don't know.
It was some RPG.
Some RPG. But the American cover had, like, this hot CG, obviously CG babe on it. And the Japanese cover had this hand-drawn anime-style RPG-looking character of the same babe.
Who I thought was a lot more attractive.
I thought it was very much a better-looking cover. Most of the Japanese covers, I think, were either equal but different to the American covers or just better-looking with brighter colors and they were happier. I think the biggest example was the Ratchet and Clank ones.
Oh, yeah, because the American ones were these crappy CG, like you see on the front of every stupid third-party game for every system ever.
Mm-hmm.
And in Japan, there were these funny anime-type drawings.
Yeah, and in the American covers, there were like these angry guys. It was an angry cat guy. I don't know what he is, but he's an angry guy. He's angry.
He's angry with a gun.
But on the Japanese cover, he's like smiling, and he's like, whee!
And even the friggin' military games, the American one, dour soldiers with guns killing people. Mm-hmm. Same game in Japan, happy soldiers chilling on a beach.
Yep. And even though it's the same exact game when you actually play it, except, of course, for the translation, you know, it's 99% the same game. But they changed the cover so much because, you know, I guess that what appeals to the different cultures and the different sides of the ocean. But the Japanese covers actually appeal more to me than the American ones do.
I find that interesting, but I note that our taste in games seems to vary greatly from that of most mainstream gamers in America.
Mm-hmm.
We're like the old school Nintendo Japan types.
Yeah. I do think, though, that they greatly underestimate how big those types of Japanese games would sell here, and they should really bring more of them over.
Yeah, I do think they'd sell. I don't think they'd appeal to a wide audience, but I think the audience they do appeal to, namely people like us or people who listen to this show or people who go to like anime cons, you know, us types, I think we would
Geeks.
More than make up for that.
We would definitely make up for it. And, you know, you just don't have to print so many of them. I keep saying this. Katamari came over. They only printed like a few copies per store. They didn't.
And yet,
make...
You all know I've talked about my coworkers in my office periodically, and to say that they're fuddy-duddies, and I hate using that word, it's kind of an understatement. They all know what Katamari is and love it.
Yeah. So all those other things that are like Katamari that you're keeping from us, Japan, send them on over. ASAP.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah.
So we decided to start another ongoing series.
Well, it might just be a two-parter, I'm betting.
At least a two-parter. We could possibly stretch into three because this is a subject we could rant on a lot for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, conventions, anime cons, gaming cons, trade conventions, Linux conventions, all sorts of conventions.
It's convention season starting about now, I think. OhioCon just happened, right?
Yep, and so. It's not too long till KatsuCon.
Yep. So we're going to prep you all, especially those people who, if you haven't been to a convention, you're thinking about going. Haven't been to a convention not thinking about going. Maybe you'll think about going, because you should. Maybe you're a convention veteran, and, you know, it doesn't matter.
Now, I hope we don't sound like condescending or like we're trying, like we're explaining this stupidly, but I guess, to put it lightly, we've been to a lot of conventions.
We're, you could say, grandmasters of convention skills.
I mean, we're not the old man who has 40 Otakon badges.
That guy's scary. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
That guy has, like, he wears this armor of badges from all the cons.
I don't think he wears it anymore, but I recognize the guy, and I still see him there.
Yep. But the main reason that we want to do this is that we have a lot of friends, and we, like, all of us go to conventions. Like, we go to Otakon, you know, 22,000 geeks, and we run into a lot of people we know. And it seems like almost every other group of people we run into has some sort of drama or problems, or they had issues with the convention and that made it a less fun experience overall for them.
Yeah, pretty much anyone I meet, even like just hearing complete strangers talk to each other, I just hear a lot of people with some sort of problem, and or someone will complain about a convention sucking, and they might even recognize that it was their fault, but it was still, they could have had a better time, but they didn't, because they didn't do something or they didn't know something that I knew and could do and could have told them to do.
And, I mean, the main thing is it started out, we go to a convention, just a few of us in a room, and every year, some of the people who had drama would decide, hey, we want to stay with Rim and Scott because their room is awesome, and they don't have trouble. So every year we've had more and more people stay with us. And for like this coming Otakon, I've already got 3 whole rooms booked in the Renaissance just for us.
Well,
and we've had people, we had a group of people ask us after the last Otakon, hey, can we stay with you guys? Because it sucked last year staying with these other people.
Wow.
Yeah. So I guess all I'm trying to say is we know what we're talking about when it comes to this.
Mm-hmm.
We may not know about viruses, Pete and Lisa and all you people in the forums.
Yeah, we know about conventions. We are convention experts. So the first thing you have to know about a convention is, should you go to it or not?
And a lot of people really don't, like, they say, oh, I want to go to a convention, but they don't really think about what they would actually do at it.
Yeah. The first thing I look at when I'm looking at any convention is location and guests.
Mostly location, because mm-hmm. the number of hours it takes you to get to a con is really going to affect whether or not it's worth it to go. Driving an hour to a crappy con is not as bad as driving 9 hours to a crappy con.
Mm-hmm. If this is a convention less than an hour away, it really doesn't matter how crappy it is. Even if it's as bad as it could possibly be, it's probably worth going. Because, you know, you'll get something out of it.
Because when we lived in Rochester, I used to do a lot of work with the anime club where we'd go and, like, show anime at other cons in the area. So we go to these little gaming cons and sci-fi cons like Astronomicon and Unicon. And they weren't the greatest cons. They were kind of small, but they were like 40 minutes away, and it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. But if those were like 2 hours away, not a chance. But meanwhile, something like PAX almost has enough draw to get me to cross the entire country to go to it.
Yeah, if we had had money, we probably would have gone this year.
Yeah,
we're definitely
seriously considered going all the way to Seattle from New York
just to hang out with a bunch of nerds and geeks for a weekend.
Yeah, because their convention was going to be so amazing. Of course, you know, I mean, look at the concert they had lined up. Damn, Mini Bosses, MC Frontline, holy crap!
Now, if you've never been to a con before, you really want to pay attention to what's going on at the con, because for someone who's never been to one before, you want to do all the stuff. So mm-hmm. what matters the most usually is what stuff there is to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start going to them a lot, to the point that you've done all the stuff there is, you really don't care what the convention's doing. You just go because it's an excuse to hang out with your friends in this unique setting and meet new people.
That's pretty much how it is. I mean, once you've seen one cosplay, you've seen them all. And once you've seen one music video contest, you've seen them all. And once you, you know, had one giant LAN party, you played them all. And sure, it might still be fun to do it again, but it's not. It's like when you go to your first convention, all you want to do is do all these things you've never done before. And then after a few cons, you're like, I've done all that, and you're looking for something new, but there won't be anything new. The only way to get something new is to go to a different type of convention, but eventually you run out of those too. And
so don't be the person who goes to like their 9th Otakon and sits in the room all alone complaining that there's nothing cool to do.
Yeah, you gotta. You know, you start out doing all the cool things, but then it's still cool. A lot of people just stop going to them, they've noticed. But we keep going because, you know, we make our own fun, you know? I mean, the Nintendo DS helped a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, quite literally, we go to Otakon every year, and we do almost nothing at the con. We barely, I mean, we don't go to any panels.
I think we went to one panel.
Yeah, and then I ran that one panel.
Yeah.
And we watched, like, we watched one closing ceremonies type thing.
I spent more time in the live-action Asian cinema room than any other single room. Like, I might have spent equal time there and the dealer's room.
I spent most of my time just hanging out.
Oh, yeah, I was hanging out. Oh, most of the time total for the whole weekend, hanging out. But most of the time at con events was, you know, dealer's room and that room. You know, but newbies, they go to every single freaky panel, and they go to every single, you know, all this, you know, wacky stuff. That, I guess, gets old pretty quick.
So I guess just think about what you want out of the con and then see if the con will provide it. I mean, if you want to see the biggest gathering of geeks in all the world, go to Otakon. Because Otakon, while it's an anime convention, is the closest thing to a pan geek convention you'll ever find.
That's for sure.
if you want gaming, find a gaming convention, because it'll be nothing but playing games with cool people all night long.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of UberCon I go to. I used to go to MichiCon, but I don't live in Michigan anymore. I went to Gen Con once, and if you can ever get to Gen Con and you're a gamer, try it. But if you're not really into games, Gen Con's not worth it.
There's also a con I just discovered recently called Essen in Essen, Germany, and that's the pinnacle of German board game amazingness that I will go to probably once in my life just to go.
Yeah, I'd love to hit that.
I think I'll just have a trip to, you know, Europe and just happen to have it while Essen is going on. You know, I won't go, it's not really worth it to go to Essen from all this way across the world, but it is worth, you know, if you're on a trip from Europe, what, you know, why not?
Now, what we're talking about really applies to all cons, but almost all of our examples are going to come from anime conventions, just because those are what we go to the most.
Yeah.
I mean, I go to gaming conventions, Scott doesn't so much, but they're almost the same. Trade conventions are a little different, but don't worry about that.
I've been to a lot of trade conventions, actually, in the food and technology-related area and job-related areas. So I could talk about those a little bit. But they're sort of a different beast because they're not about entertainment. They're about someone trying to sell you something. So you're basically just walking around to booths looking at products and services. And
you're not going to run into like a gaggle of cosplayers with DSs like running to a DDR tournament at a thing like that.
No, you're not.
And actually, we went to one Linux convention. Mm-hmm. Called PenguinCon in Novi, Michigan. And I got to say, that was fairly badass.
Yeah, I don't think any other from what I can tell based on the website and who's been to these things and the kind of events they've had, I don't think that any other instance of PenguinCon has lived up to the one we went to, so I'm really glad we went when we did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it was with that one PenguinCon, but we hit solid gold. Neil Gaiman was there and told us a story.
That I slept through.
Scott fell asleep while he was telling it.
Oh, God.
It was a cool.
It was so sad.
It was a cool Detective Cthulhu story too.
Yeah, it's like he said, "All right, I'm going to tell you a cool Detective Cthulhu story," and I'm like, "All right." And then he's like, "I tried to tell this story at another con, and I didn't finish. We're going to see how many minutes it takes to tell this story. I'm going to finish it no matter what." So I'm like, "All right." Then I start hearing the beginning of the story, and I'm like, "All right." And then I fell asleep. And then when I woke up and he's like, "Well, it takes exactly 40-something minutes to read that story." And I said, "Fuck!" "Fuck, fuck, 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 fuck."
Plus, it was weird because also Steve Jackson was there and he wanted to play a board game with us.
Yeah, and I didn't even realize it was him. Like, we were just playing Puerto Rico in the lobby and this kind of scruddy guy walks up and he's like, "Hey, I kind of want to play that." And I'm like, "All right, maybe we'll hook up later, you know, whatever."
And then
comes over like a minute later. They were like, "Dude, that was Steve Jackson." I'm like, "No way. What are you talking about?"
Then we go to a panel and there's Steve Jackson talking about Steve Jackson games.
I'm like, "Oh, shite." Yeah. But then for a geek fable we'll tell later, because of that fable, we didn't actually play with him.
Yeah, we could have. We were all set to do it, but something happened.
Well, that's a geek fable for another time.
Yes, it is.
So, once you decide if you're going to go to any particular convention, you have to decide who you're going to take with you.
This is probably the single most important decision you can make. One bad person in your group of people going to a con can ruin it.
And you know, there are things you can do if you happen to take a bad person, or, you know, someone might turn bad, like someone who might be a good person, like might get sick or something. No matter how bad it makes you feel, you have to drop that person like a rock.
Yeah, not to sound cold-hearted, but if someone's dragging you down, cast them away, because there are some people who go to a convention and for whatever reason just can't handle it, and they're probably not trying to make you have a bad time, but they're going to make you have a bad time, and there's nothing you can do about it except to leave them alone in the room.
Yeah, you're spending a lot of time and a lot of money to go to a convention, you know, no matter which one it is. Even if it's like 10 minutes away from your house and it costs $5 to get in, if you're spending more than like a day there, you know, or even if you're only spending a day, you don't want that one day ruined. You know,
I mean, Scott missed this one, but I went to Anime Central with a bunch of my friends, and we always threw crazy parties there, because we had another friend who got the presidential suite, and we had it was expected that we'd have a crazy party. And me and my friend Luke, we would like tend this non-alcoholic anime-themed bar, because the room had a freaking bar in it. So we made funny drinks like the Southern Belle Dandy, you know, stuff like that. It was cool. But we're getting ready to set up for the party, and there's a guy asleep in the little bar area. And we tried to move him, and he got all mad, and he was trying to explain that he needed sleep, and he was tired, and he was sick, and blah, 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 blah. So you guys can't have a party, because I need to sleep. Well, guess who slept in the hallway while the rest of us had a party?
Yeah, You know, not that, you know, I can't, I can understand where the guy's coming from, because if I was sleepy and sick, I would feel the same way and probably make the same blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, you know, a con is the time of ultimate fun, and no one should have to suffer except for the person who is, you know, doing badly.
I mean, in terms of ultimate fun, basically the way we schedule Otakon, which is like the pinnacle of our year when it comes to the convention season, it's like there's all these little cons that lead up to Otakon. Then we usually spend the entire week after it at one of our good friends' beach houses recovering from the freaking convention.
Mm-hmm.
Like the day after the con, we pretty much just pass out for the whole day.
Mm-hmm. So when deciding who to take with you to a convention, you want to bring with you people who are reliable. They're going to pay whatever, you know, the cost is. And they're not going to be an anchor that drags you down and makes things unfun for others.
Be especially wary of couples that are going through the throes of breakup.
Very dangerous.
Yes. Generally unstable people. You know, people who just, like Scott said, unreliable people.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, bring as many people as possible. The yes. more you bring, the cheaper it will be. And at the same time, if you have a ton of quality people, that's how you get awesome, awesome parties and awesome craziness going on.
I mean, this year we brought, what, 15 people, 16 people with us?
Yep.
And across two rooms, we had like 16 people. And then we had like 20 other people scattered in other rooms. We had like this giant posse of doom. Of course,
posse.
Some people in the other peripheral groups had some drama. Which we'll probably tell that story at some point, either today or next Thursday.
Oh, that story. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories, because all our friends have drama. And we.
This
don't.
Is why conventions are so great, is because that's where you get all the stories from.
Yeah, I'd say more than half of our stories are from conventions.
And think about conventions. Think about how much time we spend at conventions compared to time not at conventions. The fact that there's more stories there than anywhere else, that just shows you why conventions are so awesome.
I mean, I guess if you've never been to a convention, the main thing about them is that, like, look at your normal life. You probably know a bunch of geeks around you, but not that many. And there's a lot of normal people in the way. Imagine if you were in a small town for a weekend, and the only people there were geeks. The only people there were cool people who are a lot like you and have similar interests, and you can just geek and yell and scream and dress up and do crazy things with no one caring.
That's what it is.
That's what it is.
And that's why you can't let anyone drag you down. And if you're someone trying to drag others down, just cut it out. I mean, if you're not having a good time, you're upset, just, you know,
yep.
Why, if you're trying to bring other people down, you're the asshole, not, you know, the people saying, get away from me and not being sympathetic.
Because we've had both types. I mean, we had a friend once who came to a convention. She was having a really good time, but she actually got sick.
Yeah, actually.
Like, and there was no fault of her own. She was sick.
And we did feel bad.
But she was she did the right thing. There was nothing we could do to help her. So she stayed in the room and recuperated. And, like, we brought her food occasionally and made sure she was doing okay. But she went out of her way to make sure that while she was sick, she didn't hurt anyone else along the process.
And that's the way to do things at a con.
Yep, which brings back to bring quality people. If your friends are quality, they won't screw you just because they're having a bad day.
Yep. All right, the next thing you got to worry about a con is registration.
Yeah, now, basically, it used to be the conventional wisdom, and this is like only 3 years ago, if that, where you didn't want to pre-register, because often the pre-registration line was slower and longer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at least for anime conventions, this is not the case. And in fact, many of the big anime conventions sell out.
Yep.
Otakon sold out this year. Yep. So did NekoCon. KatsuCon, it almost sold out. I don't know if it actually did sell out. I don't remember.
A lot of cons are having caps on their registration because they're selling out. So pretty much if you don't pre-register, you're going to have a very hard time getting in. And a lot of them have things like Thursday registration where if you pre-register, then you can get your badge on Thursday, which is a great idea. Even though you have to pay one more night in a hotel, you spend that many more hours having fun at the con. It's totally worth it. But you have to really, with registration, you have to consider two things. Pre-registration usually gets you a discount. You have to look at how big that discount is versus how much money you have. You know, if it's really significant to get that pre-registration discount, go for it. The second thing is how big the con is. If the con is crazy huge, pre-registration is probably a good idea. If the con is a little local con with, like, less than 1,000 people or so, it doesn't really matter. You just show up and you pay. Who cares? No one really does. Whatever. And just make sure you do register. A lot of people, if you screw up registration, you could end up taking a long trip to nowhere. And that's never good.
Yep. And in terms of registration, think about money. Because this all costs money, and you're going to have to... If you run out of money, it's bad. Because we actually ran out of money at a convention once.
That's pretty much the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah, the first Otakon we went to, we didn't really know what to expect. Because our first convention, our first anime convention, was OhioCon. And while I've heard OhioCon is a lot better now and is fairly awesome, when we went, this was like the worst convention ever.
It was the first convention, anime convention I went to. And it was
yeah, it was
also
the first
terrible.
Anime con I'd ever gone to, too. And we went with a bunch of people.
I think it was the second Ohio con ever.
It was. And it's really hard to describe without going into excruciating, painful detail why it was so bad.
We'll talk about it later. But
yeah, we'll do a whole show on that Ohio con.
Yeah, but let's just say that it wasn't a greatest experience.
So when we decided to go to Otakon, we didn't know what to expect. We didn't think that Otakon would be as insane as it was. We had no idea. And we show up, and I spent, like, I had, like, $60 with me after the hotel, and I paid my $50 for a registration, and I had $10 with which to live the entire weekend and cover gas home.
Wow.
Yeah. We drove home without the air conditioning on to make sure we had enough gas.
Oh, is that the one where I got lost in the woods?
Yeah, I fell asleep in the back of the car, and you were driving, and then I woke up, and you guys were in, like, the middle of the woods with an empty tank of gas, and no lights, no street signs.
That was great.
Yeah. See, what I tell you, we have so many stories just because of these conventions.
Anyway, the next thing is transportation to the con. Transportation is real tricky. If you live, I'd say, more than 5 hours away, look into trains and planes. If you can't afford trains and planes, you might want to reconsider going to this convention unless it's crazy huge and crazy awesome.
Yes, I mean, people literally drive and fly and train from all over the world to Otakon.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come from all over the world to, like, Michikon.
Yeah.
So if you're flying 8 hours to Michikon to see, like, 200 other people, you probably made a mistake.
Mm-hmm. But just when you consider the distances, don't drive if it's too far, because really no convention is worth the pain of that driving.
Well, honestly, I mean, the furthest I've ever driven for a convention is I drove from Rochester, New York to Chicago for Anime Central.
It's not so bad.
It took 12 hours because the car broke down on the way.
Yeah, that's pretty much the limit. You know, and the con has to be pretty big to get you to do that.
Yep. It was well worth it. We're gonna do a whole show on stories from cons, because I just realized how many I have.
Yeah. I think we could probably do a whole bunch of shows and stories from cons.
Now, if you're going to take a train, and this really only applies to people in the Northeast Corridor and Amtrak, mm-hmm. because in the rest of the country, as far as I'm concerned, Amtrak does not exist.
It does. It's just slow and
it's
random.
It's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you live in the Northeast, like pretty much anywhere around D.C. or the New York area or Pennsylvania, Amtrak's fine. Anywhere else, no.
Well, you know, You might want to check it, because sometimes you'll get lucky and there will happen to be a train that does exactly what you need, like Florida to, I don't know, somewhere, you know, like North Carolina or something like that, because there are trains that do that. But just check, and if there isn't a train that's like perfect, don't even bother.
But the main thing with trains is to book. Well, one, look at the websites constantly and book, like, seriously, 6 or 7 months in advance.
Mm.
Because the next year time we went to ASEN, we decided driving is stupid. We're going to take Amtrak. And we took a 12-hour Amtrak. But it was only, like, $60 because we got some crazy deal.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get a crazy deal like that, you might be better off flying or driving.
Yep.
Flying is always real tricky because for a convention, you usually bring a lot of stuff with you and bring even more stuff back with you. And the conventions are never actually near an airport.
Mm-hmm. One thing to note is that Otakon kind of is okay to fly to, because they have a post office at the con, and you just mail things to yourself. So instead of carrying them home on the plane, you just mail your stuff home and then get on the plane with whatever you want. But that's very, very, very rare, and Otakon's the only con I know of that has that. So don't, you know, fly to a con with a bunch of crap if it's not really, really worth it.
Driving's your best bet, because you really want to bring a lot of extra stuff to the con just in case. Extra pillows, extra blankets, extra towels, which we'll get into when we talk about how to overstuff a hotel room.
Oh, God. I think that's next.
Yep. But transportation, most people drive to cons. And there are a number of things to be aware of. First of all, once again, talking about reliable people, be real wary of who you're driving with and whether or not they're prepared to go.
You got to make sure, number one, perfect directions. If your directions aren't flawless, I wouldn't get in a car with someone who wasn't 100% sure they knew exactly where they were going.
I mean, if you're going in a carpool, make one person the directions person, and they give everyone the same directions, and there's a cell phone in every car.
Yep. And make that person responsible. So if anyone gets lost, well, make sure you know who to blame when things go wrong. If the directions are bad, make sure you give that person what for.
Because when we plan conventions, I mean, I guess part of the reason we have such success and a lot of our friends have had trouble is that we actually sit down and plan, you know, pen and paper, specifically, like, duties are assigned and responsibilities and blames are laid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have a thing we always say, like Scott says he's going to do something. I say, all right, Scott, that's all you.
Mm-hmm.
We're serious about that. That means whatever consequences come of Scott's action, they are his to deal with and his to take blame for.
It's basically like, all right, you can try that crazy thing, but I don't have confidence in it, so you're taking full responsibility if you want to go for it. That's what all you means.
Yep.
So when someone says all you, you know, that a lot of times you're just dissuaded from even doing it at all.
Yep.
Of course, it's great when you do it and it works and the other person just...
Now, regarding that, I highly recommend that you don't try to caravan a bunch of cars together.
That's a very, very bad idea.
Now, there are a number of reasons for that. One, I have an anecdote that is fairly detailed and gives you a good picture of exactly what can go wrong.
I think telling the anecdote actually just gives all the stuff we want to say.
Yeah. So, basically, we were going to Otakon. It was the first Otakon we went to?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was the first one. And this con, like, we have, because the hotel screwed up and all, it was just a disaster from the start. But we were going to drive on our own. Everyone was going to meet us at the hotel room that we all had, and we decided that, all right, we'll all go on our own. But a bunch of our friends said, no, we should carpool together. It'll be fun. We'll stop on the road, and we'll hang out, and blah, 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 blah. So we agreed that, all right, fine. We're going to leave at X time. You can follow us if you want, but once again, I'll note that I speed. And when I say I speed, I speed. I mean, I quite literally go about 100 miles an hour in the left lane as fast as I can go down the entirety of a freeway.
Now, you know, a lot of people, you know, whatever you want to say about speeding, we can talk about that in another podcast because we're going to put you down so fast. You know? The point is that every minute you're saving by speeding, going 100 miles an hour or more, is another minute at the con.
And
the ticket is worth it. Especially, you know, it doesn't matter. It's worth it.
I mean, it really adds up. Because I used to drive a lot between Detroit and Rochester. And if I sped, I'd make it in about 4 hours. If I drove the speed limit, it took about 7 hours.
3 hours is worth a
yeah,
lot of my...
especially when you're only going somewhere for a weekend.
Yeah, definitely. So...
so, whatever. They say, all right, fine. I said, all right, we're leaving at 6 a.m. And they're like, all right, meet us at our house and then we'll go. So we show up at their house at 6 a.m., ready to go. We expect them to get in their car and come with us.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are they not awake, but they have not packed.
Great.
That was awesome. So we, you know, being reasonable people, we waited. And that was our first mistake. We should have cut loose immediately.
We should have just said, oh, you're not ready. We thought you'd be ready at 6 and you're not. Well, see ya.
Sure.
Boom. That's what we should have done.
Yep. Just remember this. Whenever there's a problem, unless you have a reason to help the person, like they're your good friend or you screwed up or like it's your fault that they're having a problem and not their own fault.
Yep, yep, yep.
But if it's their own fault and they're going to detract from the con, you really got to cut loose.
Mm-hmm.
So we waited and they finally get all their stuff together. And then one of them decides to lead us to the freeway. Well, he didn't know how to get to the freeway and led us in the middle of nowhere.
Great.
Great. So I passed all of them, flashed my brights and my flashers and follow me. And I took everyone to the freeway and then we're going. So we're on the freeway. I get up to about 75, and one of them calls us, slow down.
Yeah, we're probably not going to slow down.
Yeah, so we slowed down a little, but we kept inching up, and they eventually followed us around 75, even though I really wanted to be going about 100, but they wouldn't follow, and whatever. So then, finally, we're about an hour and a half on the road, and all of us have to pee.
Mm-hmm.
So we decide to stop and pee.
Stopping and peeing is okay, but make it quick. Stop at the rest stop, go in, pee, get out.
So while we're stopped and peeing, people in the other cars decide they want to stop at this little diner there and eat breakfast.
It's not even like a diner that I would eat at ever. It was like a trucker diner. It was kind of scary.
Yeah, but two, it's real important to remember that unless you really shouldn't stop on your way to a convention. Because say
unless you absolutely have to.
Yeah, but I mean, don't stop and eat breakfast on the way, because you're much better off getting to the con and then hanging out with a bunch of people and eating breakfast or lunch with them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going early in the morning, which is what you're probably going to do because you're going to take the day off work, you pack the night before, you wake up at the crack of dawn. If you need food, eat a breakfast at home or go to a diner, like, right in your hometown. Then get in the car, get on the highway, and go, and do not stop until you get there. And then once you're there and you get into the hotel and all that nice stuff, then you can go eat and hang out with people. You know, it's a lot more fun than eating with people on the road in some crummy place.
So the three cars are at this diner, and they all say they want to eat. So there are three of us in my car, and we all agree that, all right, we're cutting the rope. Goodbye, good luck, you have the directions. We get back on the road.
Mm-hmm.
They are all pissed at us. And you know what? That's fine.
We ended up getting there
3 hours before them.
3 hours. And you know what? Those were convention hours because it was a Friday, right?
Yep. I mean,
so we ended up getting 3 more hours of convention than they did. They pretty much didn't get any convention whatsoever on Friday.
Because we got there at noon. We checked into the hotel, which is a whole other story because the hotel was almost a disaster.
Yeah, we'll tell that story another time.
Yes, but we check into the hotel, and then a bunch of our friends who are already in town call us, and we all got together and got, like, breakfast, lunch at a bagel place, and hung out and got our badges, and had a good time for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then they showed up 3 hours later, miserable and hungry and tired, and they'd missed the con, and they hadn't had their food yet, and they didn't have their badges or anything.
And being illogical, they, well, blamed it on us.
Yeah.
Don't blame your own failings on someone else. I mean, you know, while we might feel sorry for you that, you know, yeah, you didn't have a fun time and that sucks, it's not our fault that you didn't have a fun time. It's your fault. And we're not going to let you drag us down, you know. Yeah. This dragging down thing, I think we've pretty much hammered it in.
Yeah.
If you don't get it by now, you're not.
So many people.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got some friends who, when they hear this, are probably going to call in and be like, oh, this happened to me, blah, 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 and they'll tell you a story that's even worse than the ones we've been telling.
Yeah, I've heard stories about, like, people going to cons with, like, people from school or with different groups. And
we're talking, like, fist fights in the rooms, molestations, money and food and jewelry being stolen. Hotels not having the rooms because the person didn't actually get the reservations. People getting lost and actually not making it to the con.
Yeah, don't let anyone drag you down. I think we've hammered it in.
That's pretty much the primary lesson here.
The next thing is your hotel. Now, you're going to want to, depending on where the con is and how full it's going to be, you have to get the hotel well enough in advance to make sure you actually get a room.
Now, for Otakon, not so much Katsucon, but for Otakon, Anime Central, and Anime Boston, and NekoCon, I'm not kidding when I say that 6 months in advance is probably the latest you want to think about this.
Yeah. Now, for a hotel, you're going to want to look at price. You're going to want to look at
proximity
to the con. If it's far away from the con, it's probably not the greatest idea because you won't be able to easily walk back and forth in case, you know, you really have stuff that you need to move around, or you suddenly need to change clothes, or maybe you're a big cosplayer, you want to change your costumes and stuff.
Because, I mean, a lot of people think that, well, it depends on what kind of con it is, too, because some cons run 24/7, mm-hmm. and some cons don't.
Yep.
And two, a lot of people use the logic of vacations, where you pick the crappiest, cheapest hotel room because all you're going to do is sleep in it. Mm-hmm. But honestly, at cons, despite how much fun you're having, you're going to go back to the room more often than you think to just chill with people.
Mm.
And you really want the room to not be a cesspool.
The other thing is, hotels will always tell you this room has an occupancy of blah. All right? Basically, while you can get in trouble for breaking that rule, lie to the hotel and tell them you have whatever the maximum occupancy is. So if it's a 4-people room with a double bed, say you have 4 people. Just tell them that.
Now,
but bring as many people as you can fit in there comfortably and divide the price among you.
Now, it really depends on the hotel. Like, the Renaissance Hotel in Baltimore, where we usually stay, I'm not kidding when I say that their normal room can comfortably sleep 8.
Mm-hmm.
And it can sleep 10 if you're a little younger and a little spryer.
Yep.
And one big trick is that if you've got a lot of people, instead of getting a suite, get 2 rooms and ask for them to be adjoining. and you can open the little door between the two rooms, you wouldn't believe how much more space that actually ends up giving you.
It's great. You can even get like three rooms adjoining. If
that's
you're
what
real
we
slick.
Did for this coming Otakon. We have three rooms adjoining. It's going to be nuts.
Yeah. Now, if it's a smaller con than Otakon, usually they're cons in hotels. You're probably going to want a room in that hotel because then you can keep going back to it all the time and you can do all sorts of crazy stuff.
At the same time, you can cram more people into the room because a lot of people are probably going to spend all night hanging out in the con.
Yep. And, you know, like at Otakon, you pretty much had to leave the con, go back to your hotel and sleep at night.
Yep.
For the cons with the hotel room in the con, usually your hotel room turns into a party room at night. There isn't a lot of sleeping going on. It just turns into like a stuffed storage bin. So you don't need to get as big a room when you have something like that.
Yep. Though if you actually want to throw a party in your room, like not just people are hanging out, but we are having a party.
Public, you know, with public admittance.
We're going to do a separate bit on that another day because we've done it many times and we can tell you exactly how to do it. And let me just say that it is not for the faint of hearted. Yeah. It is not easy. It is not trivial. You will get screwed, but it might be fun anyway.
You have to get the biggest room you can.
Yeah, and you have to expect to spend money, and you have to be the kind of person who has no trouble lying through their teeth to a police officer.
Mm-hmm. Now, so to get a hotel room, figure out the best hotel, proximity and price. Figure out how many rooms you're going to need. Make sure you call well enough in advance, you know, for the con, because the hotels will be sold out for big cons.
I mean, Otakon, three of the hotels are already sold out.
For what, August?
Yes, for this coming August.
That's 8 months away.
In fact, two of the hotels sold out within 2 weeks of the con ending last summer.
So it's 12 months prior. Yeah, great.
There were people calling hotels at the con for the next year. I'm not kidding.
So, get them well enough in advance. Make sure that you call the hotel, let's say you order the room 4 months in advance. Call them 2 months later to make sure and confirm the rooms. Then call them the week before the con and confirm the rooms.
Yes, and even then, when you get there, check in and confirm what you're getting. Because mm-hmm. remember when I said that when we showed up 3 hours before our friends and we checked in, the hotel was a disaster?
Mm-hmm.
We checked in, and they gave us the key to our room. Now, we had ordered a giant suite because we had like 12 people
coming. With an upstairs and a downstairs.
Yes, this hotel room has two stories inside of it, and it had like these Utena windows. It was awesome. So we go to our room, and we open it, and it's just a tiny little room. Mm-hmm. What the hell? So we go back to the front desk, and we're like, all right, bitches, we ordered a suite. And they're all, yeah, suite sold out. We're dumb. And we're like, great.
They ended up giving us...
They gave us the guest suite, like the presidential whatever suite, for a discount. And they worked it out with us because we were a large group of angry people who was going to raise hell.
Yep.
But I'll warn you that if something like that screws up, the hotel is not obligated to serve you in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Hotels are not obligated to keep your reservation. So keep on them and make sure you've got it.
Yeah, basically be an ass to the hotel and keep pushing them and pushing them to make sure that what you have is right. And there should be someone in your group who's the designated hotel doing person, which is probably the most responsible person.
Now, make sure, one, that person has a credit card, because you have to secure the room.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have multiple rooms, you have to secure them all separately. And we actually have to split that between two of us, because I only had one credit card, and because of various things on it, it could only secure one room at a time.
Mm.
Because they reserve a lot of money on your card to reserve a room.
Yep.
Because they're worried about breakage and such.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as for paying for the room, basically, there are two ways to look at this. We trust our close friends completely, so we don't make them pay like right away at all, whatever. We just trust that they'll give us the money, and they all give us the money. If there is any shadow of a doubt whatsoever, and even if they're close friends, make them pay in advance, either before you book the room in cash, or make them pay before you let them into the room.
Mm-hmm.
Because if someone's unreliable and they don't pay you right away, they're never going to pay you.
And you'll just end up having to pay like hundreds of dollars for this hotel room and someone else stayed in it for free on your bill. And that's not good.
Yeah, be wary of people who just say they might come and then they show up and they want a place to crash. Because that means they don't want to pay you anything, but they want to use your shower and bed.
Yeah.
Now, we've never actually had this happen, but a lot of our friends have, so this is just kind of a warning to, even though you might all be friends, work out the money ahead of time because it's real easy to lose friends over stupid things like money.
Yep. So, checking in, you get to the hotel, you go right to the desk, you say you want to check in, you get your keys, you go to your room, you put your stuff in it. You make sure that, you know, you keep count of people in the room, you keep track of those keys. Holy crap, you keep track of those keys.
Yes. If the wrong people have your keys, they'll disappear and you can't get into the room and you're fucked.
Make sure that whoever actually paid for the room, the hotel person, who you know, whoever's in the most responsible guy, he's got to have a key, whoever it is. You know,
two?
Or she.
Usually, you might think, oh, I'll give the key to the two most responsible people. Or the two people who are, like, running the event. That's always me and Scott.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's kind of stupid for both of us to have keys, because we're both usually together at the con.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So make sure you spread the keys out in a way that will inconvenience the key holders the least.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if someone is a diabetic, or someone has asthma, or someone has a reason to go to the room often, they should have a key.
Mm-hmm. And let's say there's, like, three people that are pretty much going to hang out with each other at the con. Give one of those three people a key. The most responsible of the three people a key. You know, because, you know, they'll probably be going back to the room together. And, you know, if they're not going to split up, then why give them two keys?
Now, we used to have a lot of stuff to say about, like, radios or how to keep in touch with people or rendezvous points. But honestly, that's made completely moot by cell phones.
Cell phones and Nintendo DSs pretty much eliminate any need for that.
Yeah, everyone we knew had a cell phone, and we all just call each other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one drawback of that is that, at least for us, pretty much my phone rang about every 15 minutes for the entire convention.
Mm.
I just set it to mute, and then I'd look, and like 10 people have called me, trying to get into the room, or trying to find out when we're going to eat dinner, or telling me that they found something cool,
mm-hmm.
or, yeah. That's just my rant. That's not actually anything useful.
I get just about as many calls at cons, just from other people at the con, all over the place, doing stuff. Where are you? Let's meet up and eat. Oh my god, you have to come to this event. You know, this is going on. Do you want to do this? Oh, I saw something crazy. You know,
well, I guess the warning there is that If you want to be the people like us, the ones who organize this for your group of friends, because someone has to do it or you're going to have drama, be wary that your friends, while they're your friends, will become energy leeches and will draw all of your energy, efforts, and attention for much of the con managing them.
It's a good thing that most of the time the conventions are loud and I can't hear my phone ring.
Yes.
So I don't pick it up, not because I don't want to, but because I really don't hear it sometimes at the con, which I guess is good. You know, because then I pick it up later and I go, oh, someone called, whatever. You know, and it's not super important. And if it is, they'll call again and again.
Now, we went real long, so we're going to wrap this up for now. But we're going to start up, this is going to be a series every Thursday until we finish this.
I think we might finish it next week. We're going to talk about what to do actually when you're at the con.
Yep. Next week, I want to talk about specifically how to cram a lot of people in a hotel room without getting kicked out and without having a problem.
Because
there's a lot of info there.
Yep.
All right. So stay tuned next week. Tell us your funny con stories. We'll probably play them if they're funny enough.
And have fun if you're going to any convention soon. I think the next con I'm going to is probably going to be the New York City Comic Con in the Javits Center in February.
Yep. And I'm going to be at KatsuCon. And I may or may not be on a panel. And if I'm not on a panel, I have a friend who's definitely going to be on a panel.
All right. Awesome.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for the opening music.
Thanks for listening. Please remember to point your favorite podcatcher at feeds.feedburner.com/geeknights to get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Also, please visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com for the latest updates and forum discussion. And whether you love or hate our podcast, we won't know unless you send your feedback to us at geeknights@gmail.com.